You're listening to Women's Magazine here on KPFA 94.1 FM. I'm Erin Mathieson. We now turn to our main topic for today, which is the healthcare bill about to come out of Congress. Abortion rights have become a major flashpoint in the healthcare debate. As we know, the House bill contained the controversial Stupak Amendment, which would impose new restrictions of the ability of private insurance to cover abortion. Sharon Sabota of KPFA's news department recently interviewed a 21-year-old college student named Jamie about the potential impact of the Stupak provision. Jamie discussed her own difficult decision to have an abortion.
I had always been like pro-choice, but I'd always believed that I was the type of person who would never be able to do that myself. And after finding out I was pregnant, and it was like a complete accident with someone that I wasn't seriously involved with. And after thinking about my choices, my parents told me that if I decided to keep the baby, that I was going to have to move out and find my own way. And there was just no way that I could survive, let alone care for another human being. So I had to choose what I thought was the best for myself and for, you know, I couldn't bring another person into a world where I wasn't stable. I chose the medicine procedure. So I go home, and that was part of why I chose it, because I was able to do it at home instead of being in the clinic. And you take a couple pills that induce the uterus to start shedding its layers, and it was that sort of process, and it was pretty intense. One myth is that, you know, if you get an abortion, that like your life will never be the same again, that it ruins women's lives. I feel like I've heard that a lot, and it's not far from the truth. I mean, you know, there is a lot of emotional instability or just, you know, things you have to go through, but I think that women are strong enough to be able to make the right choice and deal with it and come out of it stronger people.
The news over the past weekend has been that the Senate leaders are ready to pass their own health care bill due to a breakthrough compromise with conservative Democrat Ben Nelson. Under the compromise, states would be able to elect to prohibit policies sold on the exchange from covering abortions, and abortion coverage would have to be paid for separately from all other health care coverage. Both women's groups and the Conference of Catholic Bishops have denounced the plan. The plan also contains a mandate compelling people to buy insurance or face fines of up to 2% of their income. As the bill's head for the conference committee, we sit down with healthcare activists from three feminist organizations to get a better understanding of how we got here and where we should be going. Women's Magazine's Kate Raphael convened a roundtable including Serena Garcia from Sister Song Women of Color Health Collective, Lupe Rodriguez of the Oakland-based Access Women's Health Rights Coalition, and Marit Knutson of the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights.
You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. At the end of last month, feminists were dealt a huge blow when the Stupak Amendment became part of the final House health care bill. The Stupak provision, if it becomes law, will be the biggest blow to women's reproductive choice since the Hyde Amendment was passed in 1976. The blind side of the House vote made some pro-choice activists start thinking about their relationship to the Democratic Party and its leadership, and wondering if they'd been lulled into being too quiet. Others felt the compromises made by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were necessary to win health coverage for millions who currently don't have access to health care. Now Senate leadership is going through similar contortions, trying to appease independent Joe Lieberman, who opposes any type of public option, and conservative Democrat Ben Nelson, who is demanding that the Senate bill carry a strong anti-abortion provision like the Stupak Amendment. What are feminists doing, and what should we be doing to make ourselves heard in this debate? What lessons should we take from Stupak and Nelson? Joining me to talk about some of these issues are Marit Knutson, a member of the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights, Lupe Rodriguez, Policy Director of Access Women's Health Rights Coalition based in Oakland, and Serena Garcia from Atlanta, Communications Coordinator of Sister Song, Women of Color Reproductive Health Collective. I'm so glad to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Serena, I'm going to start with you since you're coming to us from the furthest away. Sister Song organized a huge contingent from the South to go rally and lobby in Washington in the aftermath of the House bill's passing. What were your first thoughts when you heard what the health bill did and didn't contain?
There were some things that we thought about, and primarily is just the whole framework of human rights not being included. We made sure that we talked to our member base, our membership base, about some yeses and some noes as we were getting ready to start mobilizing again to go back to D.C., being mindful that this is our second trip going to D.C. within less than 30 days, and certainly taking women of color and indigenous women to D.C. to talk to legislators and make office visits and ensure that there were key messages that were sent and driven home. And so some of the yeses that we had were definitely a yes to a public option, yes to immigrant inclusion, yes to abortion coverage for all women, and no to the Stupak-Pitts language, and no to gender discrimination. The status quo simply is unacceptable, and there are some other things that we need to be very, very clear about of what women of color and indigenous women and immigrant women, LGBTQ, there's so many different intersections that would be disenfranchised if this language continues on. And so we looked at things that we want to be able to support and things that we wanted to oppose. And one of those things was supporting a public health insurance option. And when we started looking at how we're going to be mobilizing for the second trip up to D.C., we thought about Southern activists. And because so many states in the South have not had their voices heard, particularly women of color, it was imperative that we bring women of color from the Southern states so that their voices could be represented. And so we brought women from Arkansas and Georgia and Louisiana and Alabama. And one of the key points we talked about regarding supporting a public health insurance option is because in Arkansas, for example, 75% of the market is dominated by one insurer. In Georgia, in the state where Sister Song is located as headquarters, 61% of the market is dominated by one insurer. Louisiana has the same stats. Alabama has 83% of the market dominated yet again by one insurer. And some other things that we want to make sure that we support is certainly supporting undocumented immigrants and their legal permanent residence inclusion in health care reform, supporting health care reform that reduces health care disparities and human rights violations among women of color. And then there are also one very important thing that we wanted to make sure that we brought home very clear in our storytelling, very clear in our voices and our messages and our language, and that was to oppose any language consistent with the Stupak-Pitts Amendment. It's the most visible manifestation of gender discrimination within the proposed health care reform and certainly disproportionately affecting women of color and immigrants.
Do you feel like your voices were heard on this second trip? Did you feel that you had been heard the first time? Were you surprised by how the final bill came down?
We think that we were heard on both trips. The first time that we had our mobilization, it was a rather quick turnaround of how things happened. We were already in D.C. and hosting our national membership meeting between November 7th and 9th, and we just got a phone call. One phone call that let us know what was going on. And very quickly, we assembled and gathered around different heads of organizations representing women of color, indigenous, and also allies to create unified talking points for our members and organized very quickly to visit members of the House of Representatives. And so our voices were heard because we were able to make visits during that weekend and leading up, particularly that Monday. We had 300 women that we brought to Capitol Hill, and there were so many visits that took place, at least 75 different visits took place. And then when we went back, we decided to take on a bus of women from the Mississippi areas and Georgia areas, and we flew in women of color and allies from Arkansas and also Louisiana. And so we had a bus full of about 50 women, and then we flew in about almost a dozen. And so at this particular time, we were very clear about making house visits again. We were very successful with those house visits, very successful in having our women speak to the legislators directly. In some cases, we did, of course, as you know, speak with staff. But yes, our voices were heard. Now, whether or not what they do with this information is yet to be seen, but we were able to tell our story. And so many women told very poignant stories about being disenfranchised in their local states and dealing with not being insured and having complications around helping and supporting their families because of what's going on now. And that whole process and providing advocacy training and awareness and preparation before we got to D.C. on both trips really demystified the process and helped our women feel as though they could be confident in speaking about their stories and being in the front and being heard. And so we're happy about that.
And I'd like to jump in, too. And
this
say,
is Lupe Rodriguez.
Yes, thank you. That I was lucky enough to be at the Sister Song Conference on that weekend, and specifically on the day that the vote was cast for the Stupak Amendment. And the the turnaround and the movement of the women at the conference was very fast. You know, we organized ourselves really well. And I think what happened was, can have many explanations, but certainly I wanna attest to the fact that we were there, we were responding, and that what happened next was, you know, was not an effect of not having the presence there, not having our voices there.
I think there's some confusion about what the Stupak Amendment would and wouldn't actually do if it did become law. Can you just explain briefly your understanding of what this legislation would do?
Well, it basically puts restrictions on the way people can purchase coverage, insurance coverage. Basically, in the insurance exchange, there can't be any plans sold that will that offer abortion coverage, and so women would have to buy separate insurance to be able to cover an abortion if they ever thought that they needed that. And it also, well, primarily, I guess, would put restrictions on people receiving federal subsidies to be able to buy insurance. So all the people that you know, would be newly insured that are currently uninsured and would be buying into plans wouldn't be able to use that money to buy a plan. So again, they'd have to buy it separately outside of whatever health plan that they get to be able to cover abortion. It wouldn't only affect people who are, you know, who are uninsured and would be using the federal subsidies to buy insurance, because it would create a disincentive for private insurers to even have separate plans that cover abortion. And because those plans would be separate from everything else, there might not be a plan available for people to buy in different parts of the state, and so, or different parts of the country. And so what we have now is not that great either. I think the reason why access exists is because we know that there are consistent and persistent barriers that women face every day already to be able to access abortion care and reproductive health care in general.
As I mentioned a few minutes ago, some feminists, and for full disclosure, I'm going to say that I am one of them, felt that the Stupak Amendment in particular was really a betrayal by the congressional leadership, and particularly Nancy Pelosi. As someone who lives in the Bay Area, I felt really disappointed and angry, specifically at Pelosi. Lupe, what's your perspective on that? And then, Marit, I'll ask you to speak to that as well.
We were certainly disappointed with the last minute nature of the introduction of the amendment. It was literally the night before they voted on it that it was known that it was going to be brought to the floor for a vote, and so, because we had been visiting Nancy Pelosi in her district office, Sister Song had members visiting offices of legislators, it was very surprising and disappointing that would happen at the last minute. I think we want to continue working with those legislators to show them that what they did was wrong, is something that we're completely against, and is something that we won't stand for. And I think that the response that we had on the rallies on December 2nd and the days of action that we've done subsequently have really sent that message, and we have to continue to do that moving forward.
Mara, did you want to comment on that as well?
I would. BayCorp, Bay Area Coalition for Reproductive Rights, was very angry to find out that Pelosi had been so influenced by members of the Democrats for Life as well as the ultra-right Republican Party, and furthermore, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops that helped formulate this amendment along with Stupak and Pitts to block abortion funding within this health care bill. BayCorp, as a grassroots and more radical coalition, felt that, you know, and we do feel pretty consistently that the Democrats are extremely unreliable, and they keep proving to themselves and us that they really can't be trusted to stand strong in defense of women or reproductive justice. I think on November 12th in downtown San Francisco, we had an action at the Montgomery BART station, as well as just this past two weekends ago when we, with a coalition of groups, including Direct Action for Single Payer Now, responded with a really beautiful and provocative die-in at the Embarcadero in San Francisco. So we're trying to do more street-based actions that are visible and powerful in terms of their expressiveness. But we are very disappointed and extremely angry.
Lupe and Serena, you both work a lot with immigrant rights groups and other groups of mostly people of color. And next month, the Walk for Life, the West Coast Walk for Life, is going to come into town with some very strong language to promote the idea that abortion rights are bad for people of color and that being pro-choice is tantamount to promoting genocide. Given that climate that exists in this country, have you found any reluctance among any of the social justice groups that you work with to be associated with a pro-choice or what they might see as a pro-abortion position?
I can respond to that first. This is Lupe again. I think throughout the work that we've been doing around healthcare reform and really around all of the work that we do, we're based in a reproductive justice model, as is Sister Song. And we've actually found that our allies in the social justice movement are with us on abortion rights and reproductive healthcare rights. They understand that that's part of basic human rights, that having the right to those things is part of basic humanity for people. It's part of really just the basics that everybody needs to be able to thrive and live well in this country. And I think the approach that we take is, again, from a holistic perspective, that it's about an entire person's life, and that's just one component of the number of things that might, you know, affect a person and to allow them to live well. We've partnered with a number of allies, including the California Immigrant Policy Center, and through the Having Our Say Coalition that we're a part of, which is a coalition of grassroots organizations from throughout the state that represent communities of color. We've banded with a lot of different groups that represent various different communities and do very different work than us, but are really there with us on the fact that this is important.
Mm-hmm. I'm Kate Raphael, and I'm talking with Lupe Rodriguez of Access Women's Health Rights Coalition, Mara Knudsen of the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights, and Serena Garcia of Sister Song. It's been said that this issue is driving a wedge between some of the mainstream feminist organizations and reproductive choice organizations who might want to focus strictly on abortion rights and not necessarily take on aspects like immigrant access or healthcare costs and more grassroots organizations like the ones that you all represent. Were there any groups, any women's groups or feminist groups that you had hoped to work with who have declined to be involved? Lupe?
No, our experience has actually been that we've been able to bridge the not divide, but we've been able to bridge the different groups and really be a representative and an ally with everybody. I think that we've done a lot of the work that's specifically around the abortion amendments with in alliance with Planned Parenthood and with NARAL, Pro-Choice California, with members of the California Coalition for Reproductive Freedom. But we've also, as I said, been able to bring in groups like the Having Our Say Coalition and the California Immigrant Policy Center and California Latinas for Reproductive Justice really together on all of this work. And I think that again, it's a matter of finding commonalities. I think we were successful in actually doing some of the action days in the action day in San Francisco, for example, you know, have sponsorship from various different groups and everybody sort of came together. So I think that it's possible to be successful in this. And I really, even if the messaging isn't always the same for every group, from whatever perspective they come, I think we can have each other's back, so to speak, on a lot of different issues. And I think that's been successful.
Right. Realizing that these human rights cannot be fully achieved until healthcare is accessible, affordable, and quality of care and health outcomes improve, we have to demand reform that really, truly improves the lives of women and their families. And I just want to say that we have been very successful in working collectively with so many organizations within our membership base and allies, and coming together in solidarity, coming together in collectiveness and collectiveness of spirit, and moving towards the same ideals. And yes, not all reproductive justice organizations feel totally strongly that human rights is the framework, but so many do. And even the ones that may have a slightly different perspective, they still banded with us side by side and realized that these are values that cannot and need not be taken away from us as women, and gender discrimination simply cannot be tolerated. And I think just with that vein alone, this was able to bring so many of us together. And moving forward, I don't see any further issues or complications with this banding together. If anything, I think these last two mobilization efforts has banded us even closer together. You know, when things happen, you really know the true strength of people, how quickly they can move together in solidarity. And this was certainly testimony in the last 2 months with Sister Song, all of its allies, and so many of its membership base as well. During our membership meeting, we have dozens and dozens and dozens of organizations that joined forces with us when it came time for us to make a movement very solidly, very strategically, and very quickly. And so the numbers of organizations that were represented so many different intersections. And I think that is the most important part of it, is that those intersections are represented very well through different cultures and races, LGBTQ, immigrants. And so it just was the fabric that was woven together, and it just made sense for all of us to be at the same place, the same time, and sing the same song. This is what Sister Song's name comes from, is sisters joined together to sing the same song, and that's exactly the fabric that was woven in November.
Mara, did you want to say anything about that?
I would. BayCorps' trajectory has changed quite a bit in the last 2 decades since it was formed in 88. We formed in response to the presence of Operation Rescue, which is a militantly anti-choice, anti-gay, very violent group that did a lot of damage to clinics in the 80s and 90s. And when they left the Bay Area, we began forming every year to do a counter demonstration and march for reproductive justice as the Anti-Choice Walk for Life came to San Francisco. We initially had a lot of support from Planned Parenthood when we were doing that, and that dropped off after the first year. Primarily, the Planned Parenthood people didn't want to be responding to the Catholic Church. They said, if we're responding to Operation Rescue, okay, but the Catholic Church is off limits for us, essentially. So in recent years, we've had a hard time aligning more with the more kind of big sister groups like Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and the National Organization for Women. Some of their rank and file people come out, but the leadership is opposed to sort of on the ground organizing that's more grassroots and in the streets, which is really unfortunate because we do share a lot of common goals. But we've had amazing support from groups like California Nurses Association, Latin American Coalition for Immigrant Rights, the Women of Color Resource Center in the Bay Area, Radical Women.
I'm Erin Mathewson, and this is Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley and online at kpfa.org. We'll take a short musical break and then return to our roundtable on healthcare.
Kate Raphael, and I'm talking with Lupe Rodriguez of Access Women's Health Rights Coalition, Marit Knudsen of the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights, and Serena Garcia of Sister Song. So if we can turn now to the Senate bill, Jane Hampshire of Fire Dog Lake, who's been doing a lot of organizing around the healthcare issue, says that the Senate bill is worse than nothing, and we should really oppose this bill passing. Serena, what's your take on that?
Well, primarily what Sister Song is focused on is abortion rights and certainly immigrant rights, too. As has already been said, we're not convinced as anybody else that the Democrats are going to stand firm. We just need to make sure that women's rights are not neglected. There can certainly be some great revisions to be able to be far more inclusive than what it is and go back and forth with banter. But then there are some of us, too, that agree with some statements that have been said publicly from one legislator in particular, that sometimes you may even need to consider the fact that we need to just scrap the current package altogether and just start from the very beginning and put all the inclusive language in it. So there are a number of places where we can go, but at the end of the day, we just don't want discrimination to continue within the intersections.
Lupe?
We are still studying the details of what is coming out of the Senate. We're definitely concerned about the loss of the public option. We, in our analysis before and in what we've been saying all along, I think one of our major points is that we need to have something that's affordable for women, for their families, for communities of color, women of color. And so it's very concerning to us that there might be something that will not be affordable and that people will be forced to buy insurance that they can't afford. We're also, though, looking at moving forward, even though a similar amendment to the Stupak Amendment, the Senator Nelson's amendment restricting abortion coverage, was tabled a few weeks ago or last week, I think. There's still the possibility that something could come back in some of the manager's amendments, which is amendments that Senator Reid can introduce on his own without a vote. And so we are vigilant about that. We're really concerned about that being snuck in, just as it was with the Stupak Amendment here. And so that's certainly something that we probably will not be able to stand for if it does come through. And so, but again, I think we're waiting to see the details of all of these things. And one other point that we're also looking at that might come through in some of these manager's amendments that are being discussed are some of the immigrant inclusion provisions for the legislation, and specifically the option for states to be able to offer Medicaid coverage for documented immigrants before 5 years. So currently they have to wait 5 years in order to be eligible for those benefits. And this amendment would make it so that states can choose to, you know, not have to follow that federal protocol that exists now. And that, we think, is it's just something that we're really, really rooting for.
So how good do you think the chances are that we're going to end up with something that's better than what we have?
Well, I think there are a lot of things so far that will change the way that we have insurance in this country in the bill that exists. I mean, I think that the legislation does include really groundbreaking and new restrictions on health insurers that will be positive for people. I mean, we're just really afraid that the breakdown of the discussion now and the breakdown of the process as far as it's come will mean that we'll lose an opportunity to, you know, to have reform ever. And so we've gotten really far, I think, and we want to work as much with what's coming out as we can. But really, again, I think just moving forward, continuing to stand up for the things that we want and the things that we know should be in the plans.
So some people have argued, and somebody actually sent me an article from the New York Times that made this argument, that even if the Stupak Amendment is included in the final bill, it won't really affect that many women because poor women can't afford abortions already, and middle-class women who might have insurance that covers abortion now could afford the $400 that it costs to get an early abortion. Actually, a lot of people don't realize that in California we do have Medi-Cal funding for abortions, so that at least some poor women, if they have children or if they're minors, can currently get an abortion without paying privately for it. And the other piece of that argument that I think is important to address is, you know, it's easy enough to say, oh, well, an early abortion only costs about $400 and that's not so much, you know, but what are some of the reasons why women aren't necessarily able to access those early first-term abortions?
In the time that it takes people to get themselves together to find a provider in their area, to find a provider that takes their coverage if they have it, or to get the money together to be able to afford to pay for a procedure, the pregnancy continues. And as you get further and further along in pregnancy, it becomes more expensive. It becomes less accessible as far, again, as providers are concerned, because there are less who offer their service later in pregnancy. And so it happens that, again, they don't have transportation. They don't have access to a provider locally. They don't have babysitting. They don't have, I mean, they just face so many practical barriers already. We worked with this woman, Alexandria, who is a single mother of a 5-month-old child from Stockton. And she, you know, she doesn't have a partner, and she just had a failure in her birth control. And part of the issue with that she was facing with being able to access care is that she was being evicted, and she wasn't insured at the moment. And so she was insured, but she was insured through Medicare, I should say. And Medicare, being a federally funded program, doesn't cover abortion. And she had to raise, to the point that you made earlier about the cost of abortion, she needed to raise $500. $500 may seem like nothing to many people, but for her, it was the money she needed to pay to get a new place to live.
Nancy Pelosi and other women in the House leadership have said we shouldn't really worry about the Stupak Amendment, that it'll definitely be stripped out in the conference version. Do you think that we can rely on that?
No.
So what are you all planning in the next few months?
We are on ready, as we always are. We certainly know how to mobilize in the drop of a dime. We're very, very, very glad to see the throngs of organizations within the Sister Song fold and others who joined together and made certain that certain key messages were brought out, voices were heard, stories were told. And so if we have to repeat that process, then we're ready to go. Bring it.
So as I mentioned, we're continuing the work to get into legislators' offices to talk to them. As I said, we don't think that that we want to let this die right now, to let the healthcare reform bill die right now. We want to continue to work to get what we need in healthcare reform. And so we're doing legislative visits with legislators in the coming weeks. We're also planning another action day when the votes are coming out for the Senate bill and when votes are scheduled for the conference committee. And so it'll be probably an email action that we'll put out and hope to get support from everybody.
And Marit? Tell us about the Walk for Life.
Yes, this is our big annual event that we do every year. The Walk for Life West Coast will be coming to San Francisco on Saturday, January 23rd, 2010. We are going to be doing a very vibrant counter demonstration and march along their route. We're titling it Stop the War on Women, Day of Action for Reproductive Justice. We have several demands, many of which include health care for all, no to the abortion bans, no to forced sterilization of women of color, an end to sexual violence, civil rights for queers and immigrants as well, because it's part and parcel of the struggle for basic human rights. And we're going to be convening at 10 a.m. just to the side of Justin Herman Plaza, the Music Concourse. So it's right outside of Embarcadero BART. We're going to be doing a lot of visual displays like we have been of die-ins and queer kissins and street theater. Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence will hopefully be there. So this again will be on Saturday, January 23rd. And for more information, please go to bacorr.org. That's bacorr.org. We have meetings every Tuesday night. At our website, you can find more information about meetings, but we're looking for groups to endorse. We're looking for people at table to come speak. So please get in touch with us over the web. And again, that's bacorr.org.
Marit Knudsen of the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights, Lupe Rodriguez of Access Women's Health Rights Coalition, and Serena Garcia of Sister Song. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us and fighting the good fight for healthcare reform.
Yes, thank you. Kay.
You can find more information about Sister Song, Women of Color Health Collective, and their advocacy work at www.sistersong.net. Access Women's Health Rights Coalition can be reached via their website at whrc-access.org. They offer counseling, advocacy, information, and referrals through their health line at 800-376-4636 in English or 888-442-2237 in Spanish. For more information about the Day of Action for Reproductive Justice or other activities hosted by the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights, please go to www.bacorr.org.